scripture reading for this evening is taken from 1 Peter 4, 7 through 11. 1 Peter 4, 7 through 11. The end of all things is near. Therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. Above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. As each one has received a special gift, employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Whoever speaks is to do so as one who is speaking the utterances of God. Whoever serves is to do so as one who is serving by the strength that God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and dominion forever and ever. Amen.
Sat down that first time. Had a lot of requests to sit down again. So if you're up for it, I am. Well, it's conducive because this sermon is more of from the heart type of thing. As we get into it, the question we're asking is, why on earth? You know, sometimes we go, why on earth did you do that? Taking that phrase and just going, yeah, asking yourself, why are you here on earth? You start to think about the things that you do. As we noticed, you know, in the introduction, we talked about, you know, some people just need to be killing their time, you know, with games, recreation, or something like that. It's just, they're looking for something to do just to pass the time, kill the time, whatever. Others seem to be filling it with just possessions, you know, accumulating this, you know, wealth, toys, whatever. Still others seem to be like what we call workaholics. It's almost like they throw themselves into things, their work, their business, whatever, just to keep their mind occupied, feel this sense of self-worth. Probably when you do that, you can kind of ignore your responsibilities. But we're at times like this, coming in the presence of God, we should be asking, or should be reflecting on why we are here. Kind of a philosophical pursuit. You know, questioning, you know, the reason that, you know, God designed us and why he put us here. And it's kind of summed up in the passage, whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to the glory of God. And so what Paul asks us to do is, while we're contemplating this, while we're thinking about why we are here, the answer is, you don't have to go up to a guru on a tall mountain, you know, seeking for the meaning of life. You know, God has come down to us to tell us. He's given us all the examples. You know, we were meant to work. You know, we looked at, you know, what heaven might be like, you know, a few weeks ago. And primarily as we're looking at our role, God helps us by, you know, saying, yeah, whatever you can do to glorify me. Because we, he is the creator, we are the creation, and we should reflect. You know, since we were made in his image, does our actions, to our even thoughts, intents of the heart, reflect that creation? And so what we're going to do this evening is just look at some of the things that God has given us or told us as part of instruction about really getting the meaning out of life. And this is important. I mean, as you get toward the end, you know, this is one of the things you kind of reflect on. What have I done with my life? And to be ashamed to say, well, nothing. You know, and when you're young, you think, well, yeah, I've got all this time ahead of me, so I can kind of mess around and not really get down to the business of what I should be doing here. And we forget it doesn't matter what age. We don't know how much more life we have. And this is why Ecclesiastes begins remembering your Creator in the days of your earth, days of your youth, the beginning of the 12th chapter. So what we're going to do is look at some of these things that we've already gone through the introduction here. Some of the things that God has given to us. We see an example of this in Matthew 4:10, when Jesus is being tempted by Satan. And the tempter is, you know, giving him all sorts of alternatives, what he can be doing with his life. And, you know, we might think it's weird that, well, you know, how about bowing down and serving me? And we think, well, if it put that straightforward, we'd say, no, thank you. But too often, what we've done with our lives is serve Satan. You know, we haven't stopped to think about that. Whereas, you know, what Jesus says, be gone, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only. And you have a choice here. You can serve God or you can serve other things. To reverence, when we talk about, we glorify God when we reverence him, and that's our emphasis here. To reverence means to salute a person with deep respect, to pay homage to one having a divine or sacred character, to worship or exalt. Worship and exalt a superior kind. When it gets down to that, there is only God that's in that position. So the things we reverence in here should all be focused on the things of God, and especially him. God is alone is worthy of such attention. Our whole lives should be lived in awe of the greatness of God. In Psalms 111:9, the psalmist says, he has sent redemption to his people. You know, that's something to thank God for constantly, and the fact that we are redeemed. He has ordained his covenant forever. That is, you can enter into God's covenant, and as long as you're doing your part, it will stay with you throughout this life. God's promises are yours, and reach into the next life for eternity. But it sums it up, you know, he is holy, special. Stop to think, is God special in your life? Separate, different from all other things. And it concludes with just being awesome is his name. I know it's a term that a kid uses, you know, too often, but how often do we just stop and think just how powerful he is? Greg was talking about, he got up to take a picture of the sunset, you know, or the sunrise this morning. And then after he got through taking pictures, just kind of stood there and looked at it. The picture doesn't do justice, no matter how good a photographer you are. God paints with too broad a brush, you know, in too vivid colors. But, yeah, that's just one of the small things we notice about him. You know, the more we get into a microscope, the more we look through a telescope, we realize that he is awesome in all directions. And sometimes we just don't take the time to stop and think of that. You know, that he is has a hand in everything around us. To look at, you know, the flowers are starting to bloom. How long have you taken to stop and see the colors? Or, you know, and here, the power of the wind. And that's just a small bit of his breath. Yeah. You know? As you know, it can topple trees, it can move cars, you know, whatever. There are things when God unleashes nature that we really come to respect him. I'm thinking of an incident one time. I was out of my cabin. We're out in the middle of nowhere, and you see just how awesome the weather can be. If you're tucked into canyons and stuff, you realize that the trees and the mountains take most of the brunt of it. But I remember one time, you know, I noticed that the storms used to hit either to the north or to the south, but one time it was coming straight at me. And there was a big, you know, serious-looking cloud, you know. You could tell it's serious because it had those lenses shaped to it. You know, when the wind is swirling like that, it looks like a flying saucer. And added to the fact, you know, the lightning was coming down. And I could see clearly enough where the lightning struck, it was kicking up the dirt. And then I realized it was headed right for me. And, of course, I'm the only thing sticking up out of the desert. And so I realized, you know, maybe there'd be a little bit of fear here. And you know, the only thing I think that helped was I was looking out the window, you know, boarded down in the cabin, and that thing hit the water tank, the lightning. And the lightning and the thunder came at the same time, so it was deafening, and you know, the lightning was so brilliant, it just blinded me, and you know, it just kind of almost knocked me to my knees. You know, I figured that's good, because that's where I was headed anyway, just hoping to get through this thing. But yeah, you know, God can be very awesome, and we have to take time to think about this. We don't want to forget it. You know? Now, this is true, you know, today now, as you know, the environment around us is clouded with so much junk, dirt, really. Today, you know, as we look at it, moral values are disregarded. Divorce rate continues to rise. Fornication has become the norm. Unborn children are being killed by the millions. Homosexuality is trying to find a level of respectability. We're just only halfway through this paragraph. But it's scary. Growing up as a kid, I remember, you know, having the morals of the church instilled in me by my parents. And a lot of this stuff we read of is just, you know, the things we used to watch on soap operas. But now, more and more, as we look at just our youth in the church, I mean, since I've been here, how many of the young people I know that have thought nothing of, you know, sleeping with their dates, having babies. You know, it's as if they've never heard the word of God. And that's appalling. I know they've heard it, but they've never taken the time to meditate on it, to think about it, to know the consequences of it. And this is something we need to do. We live in a drug-addicted society. Violence is rampant with no value for human life. And truth is relative. You know, if you try to tell people the truth, you know, they just, you know, shake it off like Pilate did. You know, what's truth? The difference between right and wrong, though, becomes blurred for too many people because of a certain thing. The very thing that is needed, you know, our elected officials are taking out of the equation. You know, as you look at, you know, Psalms 39, 36 here, and it begins to speak to the heart of the problem. Now, notice that it comes at it from different angles, but pretty much it's going the same thing. Where it talks about transgression, almost making it a personification. Speaks to the ungodly within his heart. I mean, this is, you know, what is the ungodly listening to? And because it says there's no fear of God. In fact, this is something that Paul quotes, you know, in Romans 3. But the state is there's no fear of God in this person. And so God's not speaking to them. Common sense isn't speaking to them. Good sense isn't speaking to them. They're listening to transgressions. That's what they listen to. As it goes on, it says, it flatters him in his own eyes concerning the discovery of his iniquity. You know, how many people, you know, nowadays are just, you know, well, I'm a bad boy. You know, it's like, you know, they take pride in the wrong that they do. You know, there may be a hatred sometimes of the things they do. You know, Romans 7 and Paul, you know, gets it across. But still, when it gets down to it, what they should be ashamed of, you know, they're parading out, you know, in the streets. You know, they're wearing the T-shirts. You know, they say, look how, you know, bad I am. Look at, you know, some of these basketball players, how many, you know, glorifying how many women they slept with. Not taking into account of you're using another person for your own gratification. No thought to what kind of damage they're doing to the other person's life, their mind, their soul. You know, because of their own gratification, they're willing to use other people. The words of his mouth are wickedness and deceit. He has ceased to be wise and to do good. That's the culmination. You know, you think you're smart. You know, they talk about being street smart. You know, the really street smart people are getting off the street. Okay, and getting into areas of respectability. It's interesting how mostly, you know, organized crime figures migrate that way. they want to get off, you know, out from, you know, the average criminal, and they start making donations to charity to try to become respectable in society. You know, even though they may put it down, they know where they need to go or would like to go. It's just better up there. He plans wickedness in his bed. This is kind of scary. You know, you may go to sleep and have, you know, nice dreams or something like that. These people go to bed and they fall asleep dreaming about the evil they can do. You know, that's what their mind, that's what their subconscious dwells on. So he sets himself on a path that is not good. That's an understatement. And the problem, he doesn't despise the evil that he does. This is the mark of a reprobate. When you can look in the problem of the world, it turns it upside down, making white, black, black, white, whatever. They say, you know, what's good is bad, what's bad is good. You know, we find ourselves being more and more confronted with this. Whereas when the apostles preached, this is what the word cried out, and the world cried out at. This is what they screamed was their problem. Hey, you guys are turning the world upside down. No, we're writing it back the way that God wanted it to be. And you have to figure that out. It doesn't matter what the world says, the pressure they bring on us. You know, who's going to have the last say? Or we'd put it, who's going to have the last laugh? While the world is on his knees, you know, in fear, before God being awesome. You know, those that are his, the small few, you know, are going to be mighty happy that they decided to take the road less traveled, as a lot of preachers put it, you know, from Robert Frost, you know, poem. Further along this, the problem is this lack of reverence for God. Moral values, they have to rest on God. You know, when people want to get God out of the picture, you know, in school, in fact, even in church now, it leaves you nowhere. You know, we talked a couple of weeks ago, the papers were kind of playing up the atheistic mega churches that were sprouting up and people were pushing. Well, the latest news is they don't get along and they've broken up. They can't agree with each other. You know, how a good atheist is supposed to conduct himself in services, you know, worshiping who knows what. But yeah, they don't know where to go for a standard. They have no idea what a moral is. They wouldn't know what an ethic procedure is, you know, if it came up and bit them. You know, they just don't have a clue. You know, it's because they get away from God. And when you get away from God, the source of all wisdom, you begin to look stupid. I don't know how better put it, you know, and I don't want to put it any more tactfully. You know, when you get away from God, you're getting away from all source of knowledge, true knowledge, away from truth itself, and a right way of living. In John 4, as Jesus is talking to the woman at the well, and she's asking about where's the right place to worship, you know, how to worship. And Jesus tells her, you know, here, God's a spirit, and if you worship him, you must. Unconditionally. You know, there's no other way to approach it. You must worship him in spirit. That's what we're just talking about. I know it's a small s, but that spirit, that manner, that, you know, way we do things, the attitude that we have, and we just talked about that. We have to hold God in fear and hold him in reference as being awesome. When you come into services, that's the way you should approach now that you're in the presence of God. And how often does that go over our heads? The building doesn't make, you know, God's presence. We as Christians, as we come together, we are told that God is in our midst. Are you impressed? Or do you not have the imagination to see and feel that? He's here with us now. Can't touch, see, whatever. But you have to know that as part of your belief. And you should be behaving yourself accordingly. Okay? And then it talks about not only in spirit and your attitude, but all, you know, it's part of the same polarization. Okay, they're not two separate things. They're just opposite ends of, you know, of the pole. You know, you can't properly do it in spirit unless you know what that spirit is and how to do that. Okay, so the truth has to be part of that. Okay, but you can't, you know, but knowing what the truth is means that you have the right spirit to do that. The two go together. So if we looked at, you know, the awesomeness that should be here and the respect and the reverence, and the second part then is, you know, we, how do you put that? We glorify God when we reverence that truth as part of it. 1 Peter 4, you know, 11 and 12 was as part of what Joe read as a context. When he talks about let him speak as, the King James has the oracles of God. Now, I very much respect the sentiment. It's not quite accurate. But utterances kind of get to the other way, and sometimes we lose track of what it's talking about. An oracle in the Greek world, like the oracle at Delphi, often was a woman that got in front of the crowd, and then she would go rigid, and her voice would drop to almost a masculine level, and she'd start to talk. And supposedly, what she was doing is being possessed by the god Apollo, or whatever god they were worshiping in whatever temple, you know, they're at. But at Delphi, it was the god Apollo. And he would, supposedly, take over the person, totally, and just use their vocal cords, you know, to talk, you know, to the people. Okay. So that's close to being, you know, I can understand that. If we could turn ourselves over to God, that would be kind of nice. You know? But even the apostles didn't, you know, it wasn't that kind of dictation. God still left them with their personality, their thinking, you know, the way they wrote and spoke and whatever. They used their own language, their own terms, but they still got the point across. And so, you know, for us, what Peter's saying is, the things you say, the concepts you have, the big question you need to ask yourself, does it align with God? You know, I may be putting it slightly different, but in the final analysis, you know, what's there is exactly what Jesus would agree with or what God would agree with. And that's what you're shooting for. That's the total reverence for God's truth. So that, yeah, not only the things you say, which are indicative of what's in the heart, but the heart is remolded, reformed. Put another way, sometimes, you know, the things you work with will shape your lives. There's some books I've read, although they're not, you know, the ideas that were in them were fine, but sometimes in the military, you know, as they, you know, they have a tendency to use military language. Right? And I realized, you know, when if I read too much at one time, that, you know, my own speech, and I wouldn't, it's guarded as it comes out to, you know, fellow Christians and people and everything else, but in my own thinking, I realized I was getting sort of like a Tourette syndrome. You ever heard somebody with Tourette? It's like every, you know, every other word that comes out of their mouth is four letter. And I realized as I read the words and the thoughts, the way they're expressing them, they'd form in my mind that way. My thoughts would become that way. Now that's to take you downhill. To bring you up, I've also realized the more I read the Bible, the more I memorize the scriptures, the more my thoughts begin to align with the kind of words and concepts that the apostles are expressing. You take on, you know, Paul's sentence structure. And this is really what you want to do, that even in your deepest heart, you're thinking like God. This is why, you know, whatever other stuff you get into and mess with, you know, your study with the Word, the respect you have for it, the more you pour yourself into it, should override anything else you're getting into. In fact, you need to concentrate on that. One of the fruits of the Spirit is self-control. We glorify God in our bodies. You know, if we are understanding the Word, and we want to reverence God in the Word, that means that Word has to find itself out not only out of the heart into the mouth, but also in the deeds that we do. And one of the things we add to faith, one of the fruits of the Spirit, constantly talks about self-control. That is, are you checking yourself for the things that you're saying, for the things that you're doing? The actions, the words, whatever, you know, will glorify God or they won't. One or the other. So you need to make a choice. Your immorality is unacceptable to God. It does not glorify Him. Therefore, you have to be careful. If you really want to glorify God, you have to start exercising self-control. That is one of the ways. It's a hard thing to do. But to keep it uppermost in your mind, what I'm trying to do here or what I'm thinking, if it's going to glorify God, it has to be appropriate. Therefore, I have to put a check on certain things. You know, as the thoughts go through, the thoughts are going to be there, good and bad. But you decide what's going to linger there. The thoughts that are bad, so that you even exercise them at night and devise wicked things, or you glom onto the good thoughts and build on them, you know, like a crystal, so that it begins to transform your mind itself, you know, in the way you behave yourself. Talks about here being no longer slaves to our own passions. Most people rebel, and this is something to take note of. Most people rebel at the concept of being a slave to anything. You know, it's part of our nature, which is good and bad. Good in the sense that recently has been shown that the mere revelation of that position when one has been doing drugs is enough to help them get the urge to struggle against enslavement. When one is addicted, in some of the psych classes, in fact, they made us go to AA meetings and things, and a lot of times what the instructors will tell you is that the person who is an addict has no willpower whatsoever. Even though they're going to AA, even though whatever, if you put a drink around in front of them, they don't even think about it. They'll scoop it up and drink it. There's absolutely nothing that stops them from doing that. In essence, what they say is that person has to start using something else's or somebody else's will. And this is why Alcoholics Anonymous, if you read the AA book, the Bible for Alcoholics Anonymous, especially the 12-step program, at least four times the word God comes up. And that is, you're using God's will, what He wants, to take over your life until you reach the point where you can do self-control. It is an operation of the Spirit. The more you take in, the more you understand that you shouldn't be under control of the world, that's where God begins to instilling in you this desire not to be a slave of it. Until eventually you can reach the point where your mind is strong enough that you can resist. But until then, you have to totally understand that if you don't want to be a slave to something, start thinking about you already are. The world's got so many addictions on us, we're already entrapped in it. People that think you're strong, they are not. As long as they're not serving God. Now, the bad side of this is when you come to talking about, say, 1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians 6:20, for you've been bought with a price and you're no longer your own. Unfortunately, we rebel against that too. Being a slave of God, I don't want to be a slave. This is why Paul tries to reason with us, Romans 6. In this world, you're going to be slave of something. your choice as to what? Either the flesh to your own degradation or to God for glory. Men need to serve something. In World War II, there was an interesting unit put together called the First Special Services. I think I talked about them a long time ago. Eventually, the Germans began to call them the Devil's Brigade. But it was put together of the top Canadian troops, you know, putting together special forces. But the mindset of the American military was, we don't care for little special units. It's the big army that works, you know, does this. And they didn't want to give the cream of their sergeants, you know, to these little special forces. And so for the U.S.'s contribution to this First Special Forces, they got all the guys out of the stockade and sent them to be trained. Now, these guys were probably the worst of the worst. When the unit was in a town, suddenly banks were being robbed, things were broken into, they were thieves, they were, you know, any kind of criminal you want to come up with. In fact, one lieutenant talking about when they were under fire, this one guy standing up with a Thompson, and he was shooting into, you know, the German lines, and he was laughing himself sick, saying he used to get $400 a head for this in Detroit. You know, he was a hitman for the mafia. This is the kind of people that went into the First Special Forces. But an interesting thing happened. Under Colonel Frederick, these guys found a home that they never had before. They found a person they could respect. When he asked them to do something, he was alongside them doing it and doing it better than they were. If he told them to meet him, to meet behind enemy lines, 30 miles, and he'd give them a map, when they got there, they would find him in a Jeep with wine and bread waiting for him. These guys learned to serve something else. And they turned it into the finest, you know, unit there was. The Canadians became their brothers, and Frederick became, you know, the man they served loyally. Yeah. So often all we need is, you know, not the, to balk at the idea of service, but just to pick who we're going to serve. And when you're serving God, you can't serve a better master. You can't serve a better cause. Where are we? I gotta hurry. We're running out of time. The ultimate goal of a Christian is, you know, we glorify God when we do His works, not only the way we think, but when we manifest this stuff, control ourselves to align this. The ultimate goal of a Christian is to no longer take credit for those works that are really He's not a source for. Do you have a talent for something? I've got an artistic talent. Now I can build on it, you know, with skill, which means I can practice at things. But the talent is, you know, it comes from God. Whatever things you do better than other people, you can't really glorify yourself in it, you know, even if you're an Olympic athlete. There's a lot of things that came into the mix that were there through no work of yourself, but primarily just because they were, you know, a gift of God. What do we put? Whether it's talents or opportunities or resources, social setting. You know, Paul gets into this in Philippians 3. Where he says, "Well, you know, what was he? He was a Pharisee of the Pharisees of the tribe of Benjamin. Now he worked on it, became, you know, exceeded in Judaism far beyond all of his, you know, fellow countrymen." And he had positions, you know, he was able to get letters from the Sanhedrin to go into other cities and persecute Christians. But he realized all the advantage that he had was all from God. You know, and if it came from men, it was worth nothing. In fact, he said it's all, and he uses a rather rude word. The good translation just go rubbish. But he says it's all garbage compared to what God can give me of knowing Christ and Him crucified. This is why in Matthew 5:16, let your light shine before, Jesus tells his disciples, let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works, but they understand those good works are something that God is allowing you to do. That is God working through you. This is what we have to work at, you know, in ourselves, so that we're not taking the glory, that we realize that it's God working through us, and that people realize the things that we do, the things that impress them about us, they're there because it's God working in us. And then God gets the praise and we don't. And we should be happy with that. I'm going to hurry through. We glorify God when we suffer for Him. I mean, really suffer. We talked a little bit about that. Peter says, you know, are we there? Yeah. Peter says, if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not feel ashamed, but in that name, let him glorify God. There are times, you know, Christians are going to be arrested. Criminals are going to be arrested. That association is there. Sometimes we're going to be a little bit intimidated, a little bit ashamed of being in a law court. If you're a criminal, you should be. But if you're there for your belief in God, in your service to God, you know, Christ, which it may be coming to in this country, that's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, the judge should be ashamed. The prosecutor should be ashamed. You know, the police officer should be ashamed. They're not serving God and you are. Glorify God in the position. In fact, we're warned all who desire to live godly in Christ Jesus will be persecuted. You know, that's a heads up. We talked about that this morning. And just finish off this way. Last passage. Ephesians 3:21. Paul sums up the third chapter. To him be the glory in the church. Yeah, we've been talking about our personal lives up to this point, but as we come to services, as we assemble, the things we do here, is this assembly glorifying God? It can only do that when we're doing it according to God's will, according to His guidelines, according to His Word. When we show a proper attitude toward Him, when we show a proper respect for His Word, and when we show a proper respect for one another as we come together in fellowship, we glorify God in the church. It is definite that at judgment all men will fear and glorify God. But what we're trying to do is not wait to that last minute. To take the time to stop and think and reflect and go, wait a minute, now's the time to do it. Because I'm not sure, you know, of another 20 or 30 or 60 years. One of the things, you know, when I was in insurance is they gave us little handouts, people at different ages. You know, when they died, and you could pick any age you wanted to, and you could find somebody who died at that age. When they were just born, at 2, at 6, at 20, at 21, 16, 30, yeah. Most of them didn't make it to ripe old age. And what they died of. You know, the list was just about anything you could think of. I mean, not too long ago, a lot of times just surgery, any kind of surgery was a risk. When I was in junior high, a friend of mine, Frank, in front, he sat in front of me in class, and one day Frank wasn't there anymore. I asked the teacher what happened, and she said, he went in for a routine operation and didn't come off the table. In junior high. When you're thinking about God and glorifying Him, right now, as long as you're thinking, and as long as you got the time, is the time to put the effort in. Why God calls us at all times. You know, to look at your life and say, what am I doing with it? Am I just going to waste it for the rest of the time that I have? Or is the uppermost thing in what I'm doing is going to be God's righteousness and His kingdom? Because the effort we put into that kingdom and His righteousness is the predominant thing that will determine what kind of people we are. and especially what kind of judgment we're going to get on the last day. So Paul says, to him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly all we ask or think. Sometimes we don't give God enough credit. You know, we don't think of him as being powerful enough. But one of the things, you know, when Isaac's servant went to get a wife, and he's putting down conditions, you know, for what this girl is going to do to test out. Yeah. And we made the comment, before he even finished the prayer, the girl showed up. Okay. God is way ahead of us. And he's way ahead of us also in of the limitation we think in. You know, sometimes we go, well, can God really pull this off or whatever? And Paul goes, you really don't know God. He can do, you know, notice the adjectives in the superlative. I mean, you really only need one, but Paul points, you know, pours them out. Exceedingly, abundantly, beyond all we ask or think. I mean, just beyond could have been, you know, good enough. But Paul says, he's beyond your thinking. He's beyond your thinking exceedingly. He's beyond your thinking and abundantly. You know, he's way ahead of you. He knows what your needs are. And we don't rely on him enough. Okay, that's not giving him due reverence. Leave you with the last part of Ecclesiastes. The writer there, you know, the conclusion, I hope that's the right thing, the conclusion when all has been heard, okay, looking at life, you know, Ecclesiastes is taking you through life. What's important and what isn't? And he sums it up. Here's the conclusion. The whole of man is to fear God and keep his commandments. If you're willing to commit yourself to that thinking, to that perspective, to that sacrifice, to that reverence, you're what God is looking for. To you, the invitation is extended. If at this time you want to begin your service to God, whatever we can do to help, please let us know. Or if you've already started and you need help through it, that's what the church is here for. This is the way we glorify him, looking out for one another. Won't you come as we stand to sing?